In case you don't know me, my name is Joe McBride. I've been coming to Elson for about 17, 18 years. I'm an elder, one of the elders here at the church, one of seven. I'm just thankful to be here today and preach the word, and I hope that you're able to take away with it. You got comfort, and you find what God's love is and reminded what God's love and the sacrifices he did for us. And I always like to think in the bigger context of things, things that are huge, it just fascinates me. So you know that we're on the planet Earth. But it's hard sometimes to forget exactly what Earth is and what it's doing, right? So you understand that it's rotating, and at its axis is rotating about 1,000 miles per hour. Now, we don't feel that because everything's in motion. It's just like if you're on an airplane, it may be going 500 miles an hour, you really don't feel it. But what happens if you get turbulence? Or they kind of roll off the throttle a little bit. You feel that motion, don't you? Do you ever feel that on Earth? God's got that thing rotating in perfect order. It's not chaos. And it's also tilting. Don't forget about the tilt. We have a sun. Everybody knows the sun. It's shining outside right now. How fast do you think we're going around the sun to make one complete orbit around the sun? How fast are we going? 67,000 miles per hour. That's 18.5 miles per second. Now, again, we can't feel this because everything's in motion. Just like there's a fly in your car, right? It's just flying around, walking around. It's not really going. You know, everything's at the same motion. It really doesn't know that it's going that fast. Let's talk about our solar system. In our Milky Way. I didn't know this. Maybe you do. It's also orbiting. Did you know that? To make one complete orbit, it's going to take 200 million years. How they know this, I don't know. I'm just telling you, communicating this. The point is, it's in awe. It's going 140 miles per second. All right, I just hit this. Did you see my water shake? Do you see that at all? Maybe not. If I hit it perfectly still, and you just kind of move it, and it shakes, I can set this thing here perfectly still, and it does nothing. Is God awesome or what? He spoke this into existence. But yet, he thought it was, I'm going to create man in his image. And the love that he has for us is enormous. So today I'm going to talk about the lost sheep, the parable of the lost sheep. Jesus was good to give these parables to give us a better understanding of his point. Sometimes he has to repeat it because it's not always understood the first time around. They're like, I'm confused, Jesus. Could you kind of like really tell us what this means? So if you're following along in Luke 15, verse 1. Tax collectors and other notorious sinners often came to listen to Jesus teach. This made the Pharisees and the teachers of religious law complain that he was associating with such despicable people, even eating with them. So Jesus used this illustration. If you had 100 sheep and one of them strayed away and was lost in the wilderness, wouldn't you leave the 99 others to go and search for the lost one until you found it? And then you would joyfully carry it home on your shoulders. When you arrived, you would call together your friends and neighbors and rejoice with you because your lost sheep was found. In the same way, heaven will be happier over one lost sinner who returns to God than over 99 others who are righteous and haven't strayed away. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for your word. Thank you for its abundance of wisdom and life, direction, and how we should be pointed toward you in everything that we do. And your reassurance that you're not a mean God, that you are a loving God, and that you are sharing with us that because we're created in your image, we are worthy. We're not worthy, but because of you, through you, we are. Your son Jesus paid that for us, Lord. Be with us as we read through the rest of the word, and our learnings go with us the rest of the day. And please, please soften our hearts, Lord. Okay, so let's go back to the first verse. We talked about your tax collectors and your other notorious sinners. There's other versions. You may not see this word notorious. I'm not sure I use notorious very often. Do you use notorious very often? Do you have an idea what it means? All right, I see some blank stares. I had to look it up. I'm like, let's make sure what notorious is. It used to be somewhat of a neutral word, but it's adopted the term in a very negative way, and it's those that have done something really bad, and they're pretty much really known for doing it, like serial killers, the gangsters in the time, really bad things they are known for doing. Okay, that's notorious sinners. Now, why would they be coming and trying to follow along with what Jesus is doing, I wonder? I think it was because they run out of options. They know they've hit the bottom. They need some other answers. They can't do it on their own. So they're like, I might as well try Jesus, see what he does. So those are notorious sinners. Tax collectors, we all know that those were the Jewish people that were tax collectors, and they gathered taxes on behalf of the Roman government, but they kept a little bit for themselves, didn't they? I say a little bit, but they took more than what they needed, and they kept it. So it's kind of like they're being betrayed. So we got two different people here trying to find out what this message is all about. Now, the Pharisees, they see that Jesus is amongst the sinners. They're amongst the folks that are dirty. They're dirty. Look at us in this room. We become a little comfortable that we're hanging around with people that we know, that we're used to, that we're all hopefully thinking of the same things. We believe the same things. Jesus went out amongst the sinners. He dined with them. He spoke with them, right? So again, this whole idea of the parable is important because I think of the 100 sheep. This is me. If I lost one, I still have 99 left. I'd be like, I can calculate my loss here. I'm like, is it really worth leaving the 99 going after the one? My brain would be like, hey, you want to stray away, you get what you get. If you have a dog, you might have felt this before. It's just coincidental that we saw, was it yesterday, day before, out on the south side of town, on Veterans, about where the Walmart area is, we're going westbound, and all these cars were kind of coming to a stop. Well, there was a dog that had gotten through that grassy, nasty little ditchy area and was on this patch of grass that's about this much by the road, and there was a gentleman on the other side of that ditch that was trying to retrieve the dog. So he's trying to, like, come here, you know, come on, because I guess he can't cross the ditch. So the dog wanted to go, but, like, didn't because it was all weedy and stuff. And I'm thinking, I've had those situations before when my dog has gotten away. And I wasn't too happy about that. Do you know what I'm saying? I was a little upset. In fact, when I'm like, when I get that dog, I've seen people run through our neighborhoods after their dogs, and the dog just thinks it's a game. And they're trying to catch this dog, just like impossible. That's the sheep that wandered, that went off. My attitude, like, you get what you get. I'm not chasing after you. Maybe it's more than one time. You're gone. You're out of here. But that's not what the shepherd does in this case. If you had 100 sheep and one of them strayed away and was lost in the wilderness, wouldn't you leave the 99 others to go search for the one, to the lost one until you found it? Wow. That just shows right there that God has that reckless love. Nails that reckless love philosophy, or the way that he looks at his sons and daughters. He chases after us. And I used to believe, not believe, but think of the lost. It could be those that have never been redeemed, who don't know Christ, who aren't followers, but also those who are, who wander, who stray because of our own sins. And we feel like, and that dog I mentioned to you, he wanted to go across the ditch. And when he started to get closer to the owner, you could tell that he was feeling remorse. He knew that he did something wrong. when we approach our own sin, we've let it go long enough, and we feel like, I'm going to get nailed again this time because I knew better. I knew I wasn't supposed to stray. I knew I wasn't supposed to take that drink. I knew I wasn't supposed to look at that picture. I knew I wasn't supposed to say those words or be mean to that person or think in my heart about that driver that just cut me off. But the more and more that festers, the more and more you just kind of get used to it, thinking there's no way I can go back. That's not what God does. He chases. He goes out and seeks and finds. He doesn't abandon you because of what you've done. He constantly will chase you down. And in verse 5, we say, and then you will joyfully carry it home on your shoulders. Wow, there's joyfully. Again, the dog being found, I ain't joyfully picking that dog up for anything. If I get the collar on, the leash on, I'm dragging that dog. I'm not joyfully picking it up and taking it home. It's not rational. It's not rational what God does. In our minds, think about God who created everything, knows everything from the start to the end of time, is everywhere at all the time, and yet he does this for us. That's irrational. It's rational thinking for us to believe, every human being to believe that God has something to offer that would better our lives. Because if we do, and we live our lives under God's forgiveness and his love, we may have to do away with some our luxuries that we enjoy, but if we die, guess who we will be? For those who don't, those who choose to do it on their own and not have Jesus as a Savior, eternal life in hell. That's a logical choice. If one was to look at it just on its own, that seems logical. You would live a better life just by living by what Jesus has to offer. But God does an irrational thing in our mind, the way he sacrifices himself for us. He's God. It's unfathomable for me to believe that, yes, he did that. And knowing from the beginning that that would happen. We get used to what we know. And my wife will attest to this, is that when I hear the word amazing, I tend to have a little bit of attitude about it. If some of you use that word, that's okay. It's just that word for me is reserved. It's reserved for something like Jesus walking on water. That's amazing. You may find some things interesting or fascinating, but amazing is a word, is what I say for Jesus and what God does. Because what it is and what he has done is simply amazing. I've watched several game shows that will allow the contestant to achieve a monetary reward or winning based on how they perform on the show. And if they get to a certain level, they are guaranteed X number of dollars. And if they get to that point, which on itself, if they would have thought about it before the game, or any of us, if you was to think about $50,000, that seems like a lot of money. And if you were to have that tomorrow in your bank account, you would be elated. But what if you have a chance to win more? See how fast your mind will quickly turn when you get comfortable with something that you know that you have, but yet there's more. Jesus already offers all that more. Whenever you believe in him and follow him and repent and be redeemed in Jesus, you already have the more. But we get used to the mentality of our sinful nature self that, yeah, it's great Jesus did that for me. He's doing some pretty good things in my life. I got a house, I got a car. feel pretty good about, got a job. But that's not what it's all about, folks. He wants us to tell your story, tell your testimony to others that he is the answer. He is the one that can heal your pain. He's the one that can fill your heart with love. Not us, folks. God is so good. So good. The other thing I want to make sure that you catch in this is that Jesus doesn't push out sinners. He brings sinners in. So if you go to John 10, if you're following along here, I'm going to read a little bit, but this is important. So here, John 10, verse 1. I assure you, anyone who sneaks over the wall of a sheepfold rather than going through the gate must surely be a thief and a robber. For a shepherd enters through the gate. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep hear his voice and come to him. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. After he has gathered his own flock, he walks ahead of them, and they follow him because they recognize his voice. They won't follow a stranger. They will run from him because they don't recognize his voice. Remember the point I said, well, sometimes people don't understand what Jesus said? Here we go. Those who heard Jesus used this illustration, didn't understand what he meant. So he explained to them again. I assure you, I am the gate for the sheep, he said. All others who came before me were thieves and robbers, but the true sheep did not listen to them. Yes, I am the gate. Those who come in through me will be saved. Wherever they go, they will find green pastures. The thief's purpose is to steal, kill, and destroy. Listen, folks, my purpose is to give life in all its fullness. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. A hired hand will run when he sees a wolf coming. He will leave the sheep because they aren't his and he isn't their shepherd. And so the wolf attacks them and scatters the flock. The hired hand runs away because he is merely hired and has no real concern for the sheep. But yet I am the good shepherd. I know my own sheep and they know me, just as my Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep too that are not in this sheepfold. I must bring them in also, and they will listen to my voice, and they will be one flock with one shepherd. This is Jesus changing the world of no distinction of the Jew and the Gentile. The Pharisees, the sinners, all are welcome. So as we reflect upon how we care for others, how we view others, how we interact with others, what we think of their worth, think of Jesus and his time on earth talking with those who are sick, talking with those with compassion, showing his love for them. It goes against logic. It's irrational for him, for us to think about him doing that, but he did it, and he did it willingly. There's two groups, I think, that we fit in here, folks. Those in the room that may not have a life with Jesus and have their salvation through him and the grace and mercy that Jesus offers. And to that, I hope today at some point we will offer a chance for you to consider a life following Jesus. For the rest of the room who are followers, think about the ways that we perhaps wondered or the things that are keeping us from knowing the full potential of our lives through Jesus. Be prepared because you are the lost sheep. Lost sheep didn't say, here, find me. Lost sheep went about their way. And Jesus will chase until he finds you. I've got a personal story to tell you about that. Some of you may not know. Some do. Last year, in the summer, actually it occurred before that, I ride a motorcycle. And I do a lot of long-distance motorcycling. And first of all, you probably think I'm a nut for even motorcycling. But I'm also a nut who likes to travel hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles in a very short period of time on a motorcycle, which in itself is crazy. I decided to do a challenge to ride from coast to coast in less than 50 hours. I started in Jacksonville, Florida, ended up in San Diego, California, and I did achieve that. That was the hard part. The next part coming up was going to be the rest of my several days after to go up and meander and enjoy the West Coast, not the West Coast, but out West, and have a joyful time of riding my motorcycle out there. But, you know, that wasn't just good enough. I had to bring my habit along with me to be what I thought would be fun. What started out probably years ago was just a casual drinker. You know, after mowing the yard, the beer in the garage, beer with a friend, something like that, it turned into something more than beer, something that was more more stronger, and it started to be a little faster. And so I took that habit with me out West. And it was very, at my house, was it caused a lot of conflict. But in my own self, my own sinful self, I could justify that. I could put reasoning on it, and I was not looking through the eyes of the Lord at it. I took that habit out, and at some point, when I had a day of riding that was simply overwhelming to me, I thought, I deserve a little time for myself that evening, and which I did in Wyoming. And I indulged, and I ran out. I decided to walk couple blocks down at this bar that was down there. I don't go to bars. That really wasn't my thing. I was more of a solo, quiet type of person than doing it. I didn't do it in groups. It was just me. I ended up down there, and I wish there was some point where I'd say, you know, I realized what I was doing was wrong, but I continued. And so on my way back, without even remembering it, I guess I ended up falling down and passing out on the sidewalk, for which the police then found me. Ended up in jail, in a cell, woke up, had an idea why I was there, but didn't know how I got there. Didn't have my phone, had nothing. People there weren't very friendly to those who were incarcerated, no matter who you are. I thought Joe's nice enough, he could probably get his way out of this one. There's no getting way out of that one. They treat you just like if you to do things you turn your nose down on that I think that would be more disgusting. It doesn't matter. They treat you the same. I had hours to think about this, folks. And all I could think about was poor me. I got in trouble. I got caught. What am I going to do? What's my wife going to say? What are my friends going to say? How am I going to get out of this? How am I going to explain it? I hate conflict, but there's going to be conflict galore to reap. I had to be sober before I left. And by the time that happened, it was around 3 o'clock. This was a Friday, I'm sorry, a Thursday, well, Friday morning. They let me go that Friday afternoon, and I was asking about, well, I saw paperwork that said I was due on Monday for a court, for an appearance in front of the judge. I'm like, hey, I'm from out of town, and I got to get going on the road. I can't come back for this. Well, you could try to make it down to the courthouse and see if you could work something out. I had no idea where the courthouse was. I didn't even know where I was at this point. And I took off walking pretty quickly, as fast as I could, down to where they described to me. Couldn't find it. Now it's about 4:15. This is a Friday. Everything closes at 5. I hurried along, and I actually walked past, in front of, on the sidewalk, the place that I was supposed to go. Walked right by it because I didn't know that was the place. Went to another place. Long story short, I had to go back to that place. It was 5 after 5. The place was closed. And Joe sat on those steps and was feeling so sorry for himself about how's he going to explain this? He's going to be in trouble. I'm going to have to make a phone call. Again, my phone was dead. I couldn't get a hold of nobody. And I forgot to mention that my wife and my parents and everybody have the thing on their phone where they can see where I'm at. So this whole time I'm thinking they know where I'm at. I can't tell them why. So I went walking back to the hotel where I was from, and I walked slowly. If you can imagine, if you were so disgusted with yourself and you knew what lied ahead of you and you had to make a lonely walk, can you see yourself kind of slumped over and just shaking your head, feel like you have no answers? That's what I was going through. I wasn't looking toward Jesus to help me at that point. I was self-centered, selfish. It was disgusting is what it was. When I got back to the hotel, I found out that Angela had determined where I was. Didn't really know exactly what happened, but she knew where I was, trying to find out if I was safe. She didn't know if I was on a motorcycle wreck. She had no idea. But she wanted to make sure that my motorcycle was safe, which I didn't take it. I walked. She found that out at the place at the hotel. All my stuff was in the room, and I was supposed to check out that morning. And now here it is, 5 o'clock in the evening on Friday. And she arranged to pay for another night of their room so that they wouldn't take my stuff out. That just blew me away. I had a wife that, yeah, I'm sure she was disappointed and upset. But the love of Christ in her, as she was showing me the forgiveness it takes to get through something like this. Soon after that, we're talking. You can tell that she was upset about it, but yet she didn't let the disappointment overshadow the fact that the love that we have. Soon after, I spoke with Pastor Randy. I spoke with Pastor Jared. Both of them offered counsel that was not about smacking the dog because the dog ran away. It was just like the good shepherd after the lost sheep, given the counsel. I found out that discipline is not a bad thing. This is what I banked on. This discipline is what I needed. The next few days, now again, I got a court case on Monday, so I had to stay the weekend. I didn't know what to do, really. I was sitting there soaking about all the stuff that I did. I had to think about this. But there was a message that I had learned a long time ago by a preacher named Junior Hill, who told a story about him getting fired from the church as a pastor one time. And he says him and his wife were driving after, and she was like, you know, honey, what are we going to do? And he's like, you know, I don't know what we're going to do, but I know what we're going to do. He says, we're going to go to church after getting fired. We're going to go to church. So they found some church in some little town, and they went to church. I said, that's what I'm going to do. Tomorrow, Sunday, I'm going to church. So I looked one up, and the one that I found was one of the pictures on their site was an altar call, and there was many people up at the altar. I'm like, that's where I'm going. That the Lord led me through all of this. Afterwards, it just gives me goosebumps. The Lord provided me a way to see it that I understood. I would be the one asking, I'm like, you know, Lord, tell me really how this is supposed to go. He communicated a way that I understood. Remember the part about the earth and the rotations and all that stuff? That just mind boggles me. this mind-boggled me. All these pieces were fitting together for the Lord to demonstrate to me I was the lost sheep. That church, I showed up almost 3 hours early. The pastor showed up, Pastor Alex. He was in the parking lot. And I followed him inside, and it was still dark, and he was a little confused on why I was there. He greeted me, and I told him, I said, I'm here for church. He goes, well, hey, you know, there's coffee over here if you want some coffee, or you want to join us while we practice worship team. He said, that's great, and everything. So I did. I ended up helping people clean the coffee machine and all kinds of things like that. And the service started, and I sat behind a couple older than me, and their names was Dee and Elton. And Dee and Elton started to talk to me, and I started to tell them why I was there in the motorcycling, and it got their attention. They're asking me questions, and then the service started. And from the very first song, I know that I was going up there. I was going to shed all of this nastiness that was on me for good. I was going to leave it at that altar. And that's what I felt. The Lord picked me up, just like in the parable. He picked that lost sheep up and was joyful. Not scolding, not, you better not do this again. He let me just soak in his love that day. So for those who don't know the Lord, I would encourage you, take a look. He'll give you a life that you thought you never dreamed of. I'm not talking about health and wealth and cars and homes and happiness. I'm talking about fulfillment. I'm talking about joy. The guarantee that your future is secure. No question, your future is secure forever. Somebody on earth tell you something like that, you would have doubt 100%. The Lord gives you that, paid for. Pretty sure we've heard that before. It is finished. So you think that you've got to a point where you've done something that you won't, it's just you, it's just me, it's just the way I act, it's who I am, that's where I grew up, that's how I was, that's what I was raised in. The Lord can change that. For those of you that have strayed a little or a lot, it doesn't matter. The parable tells you about the good shepherd and the sheep, that good shepherd, the Lord, that reckless love that he has, relentless pursuit of those that he loves. So, I'm going to invite those that anybody would like to, if he is working on you, if there's anything in you that you feel like an urge, don't ignore it. I would encourage you, come up front. We're going to play a song. I'm going to be up here. Some of the elders can come up. Elders, we're going to play a song. If there's something that you wish to relinquish and be freed from and feel the freedom that he has to offer, and only he can offer. Something that money can't buy, something you can do can't buy. He's already done it. He's already done it. So you guys ready to do something? So again, we're just going to play a song. If two come up, one come up, zero, that's great. Let the Lord work. That's all I'm asking. But I'm just giving an opportunity. If you wish to do that today, you certainly can.